their employer changes their insurance policy. Medicare for All is comprehensive health care, covers all basic needs, including home health care. It allows you to go to any doctor you want, which many private insurance company programs do not. So if you want comprehensive health care, freedom of choice regarding doctor or hospital, no more than $200 a year for prescription drugs, taking on the drug companies and the insurance companies, moving to Medicare for All is the way to go.
Just some of the candidates speaking last night in Houston at the historically black college, Texas Southern University, in their third major Democratic debate. That last person, of course, was Senator Bernie Sanders. Before that, Indiana South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. I want to thank our guests for being with us, Cesar Espinosa, Executive Director of FIEL, a Houston-based nonprofit that helps undocumented members of the Latino community in Houston, Julian Brave Noisecat, director of the Green New Deal Strategy at the think tank Data for Progress, and Rashad Robinson, president of Color of Change. And that does it for our show. Today, we will be covering Greta Thunberg with many others outside the White House for this Friday for Future, the protest around climate change that's been taking place around the globe. To go to our hour on Greta Thunberg, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Thanks for that, Amy. It is 5 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland, K282BH Philomath at 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM. And this is 90.7 FM here in Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News after these short messages.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Boys Who Said No, a documentary film screening on Saturday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House in Portland. During the Vietnam War, draft resistors openly refused military service to draw others to oppose the war. The Boys Who Said No is a documentary film featuring interviews with resistors and historians. Individuals featured include folk singer and activist Joan Baez, resistance leader David Harris, Cleveland Sellers of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg, and Muhammad Ali. Again, that's The Boys Who Said No, screening Saturday, September 14th at 7 p.m. at the Multnomah Friends Meeting House, 4312 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. The Finance Committee will meet on Thursday, September 19th at 4:30 at Cider Riot at 807 Northeast Cooch Street.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News: the police officer accused of sending Patriot Prayer leader Joey Gibson protective texts has been absolved of any wrongdoing.
A new California law would ban private prisons and detention centers.
And in international news, indigenous Brazilians unite to take action against President Bolsonaro.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 13th, 2019. I'm Claire Rosciato.
And I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne. The Portland police officer who is accused of sending protective texts to the alt-right group Patriot Prayers leader Joey Gibson has been absolved of any wrongdoing by an independent review board. Community members were concerned about Lieutenant Jeff Nia's seemingly close relationship to Gibson, whose text exchanges included information and sentiments that went beyond what is an average contact between activists and police. Among other texts, Nia warned Gibson about bringing a particular Patriot Prayer member to Portland, where there was a warrant for his arrest. The Independent Review Board examined those texts, which could have violated the Dissemination of Information Directive, which prohibits officers from providing information that could help any person to evade arrest or punishment. Because the warrant was already public information, the review board determined that Lieutenant Nia did not violate the directive. The report also addressed concern about Nia's overly friendly tone to Gibson in the messages, including one where he congratulates Gibson on running for Senate. Nia also sent texts to left-wing protesters in his function as police liaison, and as such, it was determined that he did not pose a bias, and his treatment of Gibson was strategic to get more information from him.
In the reports that were issued today following the investigation of Portland Police Liaison Lieutenant Jeff Nia, new disclosures surfaced about how the PPD came to know about accused Max killer Jeremy Christian. In an April 8th interview with the review board, Nia stated that Christian had attended a Patriot Prayer Street protest in April of 2017 and made prior threats to the police online. He also made comments online and on the Max train suggesting he had white supremacist leanings. Nia said, quote, Jeremy Christian had put out social media posts with threats to police officers. And so that's what got him on my radar. And he did show up at that event. In no way did I ever believe what occurred shortly thereafter on the Max train was going to happen, end quote. Months after that event, Christian threatened a black woman on a Max Yellow Line train with a white supremacist rant and reportedly threw a Gatorade bottle at her. She responded by macing him and kicking him in the groin. The next day, Christian allegedly stabbed and slashed three men who came to the rescue of two women of color that Christian was harassing with racist statements. Christian currently awaits trial in January for aggravated murder charges. Because his case is still open, police have not yet commented on the nature of his prior threats. The families of the two men killed in the Max stabbings have sued the PPB and TriMet for $20 million, saying they could have done more to keep him off public transit.
On Wednesday, California lawmakers passed a bill banning private prisons in a vote 65-11. The new legislation, AB 32, is now pending a signature from California Governor Gavin Newsom, who is expected to support the bill. If signed into law, AB 32 would prevent the state from entering into or renewing contracts with private prison companies, effective January 1st, 2020. The bill applies to any private detention facility holding a person who is detained based on civil charges. Therefore, this legislation represents a victory for both criminal justice reform and immigration rights. Many immigration advocacy groups have long fought against the use of for-profit prisons to house detained immigrants. The bill will likely cause four large ICE prisons to close within the next 5 years. The contracts for all four facilities are set to expire by 2023 and will not be up for renewal under the new legislation. However, the bill does make an exception for renewal and extensions of contracts with private facilities to comply with a federal court order to reduce crowding in state-run facilities. The Alameda Democrat and author of the bill, Rob Bonta, said the provision was not intended to create more tension between the state and the Trump administration. The inclusion of immigrant detention centers was added in June after reports surfaced of immigrants becoming ill and even dying in poor conditions and overcrowded private facilities. Bonta said the measure is about protecting the dignity of inmates from companies that, quote, only care about the almighty dollar.
Yesterday, tribal groups confronted the Trump administration in federal court, suing the government over the permits that were issued to build the Keystone XL pipeline. Antonio Gonzalez has that story and much more in today's report from National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to indigenous news, issues, and culture.
The President of the United States has the ongoing treaty obligation to protect tribes and their land from damage and encroachment. That was the argument made in federal court Thursday by the Rosebud Sioux Tribe and the Fort Belknap Indian Community. The tribe sued President Trump and other federal agencies for giving TC Energy, formerly TransCanada, a permit for the Keystone XL pipeline to cross the U.S.-Canada border into Montana. Victoria Wicks reports.
Wes Furlong of the Native American Rights Fund is one of several attorneys who were present at the hearing in front of Montana federal judge Brian Morris. Also present were Rodney Bordeaux, president of the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, and Andy Work, Jr., president of the Fort Belknap Indian Community, along with those tribes' council members and representatives from Pine Ridge, Fort Peck, and other tribal nations. Furlong commented by phone after the hearing. He says this case is complex, digging into the history of treaties and what their intent was and still is.
Our arguments today, to a degree, that the tribes have stated a claim that is at least plausible, that the president has the obligation to uphold and enforce the treaties, and that he can be brought to court and held accountable if he doesn't do that.
In briefs filed with the court, attorneys from the Department of Justice and TC Energy hold that the president is immune from this lawsuit. Furlong says the tribes disagree.
Certainly not our position. On behalf of the president, these treaties were negotiated, and as the president of the United States, he has an obligation to uphold them, and so he certainly can be sued for violating the treaties.
Furlong says Judge Brian Morris will issue a ruling whether the tribes' claims are plausible. If the tribes prevail, the next step is to determine if the claims have merit. TC Energy and the Department of Justice have declined to comment on this case. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's petition to intervene on a proposed expansion of the Dakota Access Pipeline was granted by a judge, the Associated Press reports. Energy Transfer wants to expand the line carrying oil in the Dakotas and Illinois. The tribe is concerned about threats to land and water from possible spills. Standing Rock is among a group of tribes continuing to fight the pipeline in court. A hearing on the proposed Dakota Access Pipeline expansion is scheduled for November. Republican Congressman Greg Gianforte is urging his peers to grant the Little Shell Tribe in Montana federal recognition. Olivia Reingold has more.
Gianforte, Montana's lone U.S. House representative, is trying to make sure that an amendment to federally recognize the Little Shell Tribe makes it into the final version of the National Defense Act. On Thursday, Gianforte submitted a letter to the House Armed Services Committee asking leadership to keep Little Shell recognition in the legislation as the House and Senate reconcile the differences between their bills. Gianforte wrote, quote, "The Little Shell people have waited long enough. It is time to give them the overdue recognition they deserve," end quote. Congress has granted federal recognition to 23 other tribes since 1960, according to Gianforte. Last fall, he introduced a Little Shell recognition bill. It passed the House in March before failing in the Senate. Now, instead of a standalone bill, he's hoping the must-pass defense bill can carry it across the finish line. It's considered so vital to government operations that it has to be enacted. Congress has passed it for over five decades now. For National Native News, I'm Olivia Reingold.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Mitch McConnell has created a, quote, assembly line to approve new justices. That's what judicial watchdogs are now saying about the Senate Majority Leader. The judicial appointments made by the Trump administration far outnumbered those in the Obama administration, and these conservative white male judges will be deciding on civil rights issues for the next 3 to 5 decades. Ros Brown has more.
A judicial watchdog group says Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has created an assembly line for approving conservative judges who will determine the civil rights of Americans for decades to come. Before recessing last month, the Republican-controlled Senate confirmed 13 new judges to lifetime appointments in a 2-day period. Daniel Goldberg with the Alliance for Justice says young, white, mostly male judges will rule on rights for workers, women, the LGBTQ community, and consumer protections for the next 3 to 5 decades.
People who will use the court, who will use their position as lifetime judges to jam a radical agenda that they could not achieve otherwise onto the country.
Since President Donald Trump took office, he's had 146 federal judges confirmed by the Senate, compared with 20 during President Barack Obama's last 2 years in office. Almost 80% of Trump's confirmed judges are male and 90% are white, while more than half the U.S. population is female and 30% of the country identifies as Latino or African American. According to Goldman, the rush to approve lifetime judges has replaced any effort by the Trump administration to pursue a legislative agenda. He believes the country's wealthy and powerful understand they can't achieve their objectives through the democratic process, so they want conservative judges to do it for them.
Long after Donald Trump leaves the scene, the judges he has put on the federal bench will be making rulings that impact the lives of everyday Americans for the next 3, 4, 5 decades.
Earlier this year, McConnell led a vote to change the rules for debate for confirming district judges from 30 hours to 2 hours. That followed his decision to block Merrick Garland, Obama's pick for the Supreme Court, for almost a year while waiting for the 2016 election that ultimately allowed Trump to choose Neil Gorsuch. For Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown.
Thank you.
listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin at 5:30. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, The Struggle. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 59. If you can see around those clouds, you'll see a full harvest moon. A full moon on Friday the 13th is a rarity. We won't see another one until August 13th, 2049. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly cloudy with a high of 75 degrees. Today in history, in 1985, Super Mario Bros. Was released in Japan for the NES, eventually leading to the Super Mario series of games. The quote of the day is from Shigeru Miyamoto, one of the creators of Mario. He said, quote, "What if everything you see is more than what you see? The person next to you is a warrior, and that space that appears empty is a secret door to another world. What if something appears that shouldn't? You either dismiss it or you accept that there is much more to the world than you think. Perhaps it is really a doorway, and if you choose to go inside, you'll find many unexpected things."
Environmental groups in Utah are suing the Trump administration to halt leases on public land to oil and gas companies. Advocates say these public lands are home to endangered species, and fracking in the area has potential to pollute the Colorado River. Mark Richardson has the story.
A coalition of conservation groups is suing the Trump administration to halt the potential environmental damage from 130 oil and gas leases awarded on public lands in Utah. The complaint says the Bureau of Land Management violated the National Environmental Policy Act by approving leases between 2014 and 2018 on 175,000 acres in southern Utah without accounting for the climate pollution it would cause. The suit seeks to invalidate all 130 leases. Landon Newell with the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance says the BLM is ignoring the potential damage of its actions.
In these leasing decisions that we've challenged, the BLM has failed to analyze reasonably foreseeable emissions that will come from its leasing decisions.
Partners in the lawsuit, in addition to the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, include the groups Living Rivers and the Center for Biological Diversity. Newell says they are most concerned about several leases granted in areas of fragile wilderness where there are also multiple historical sites.
These leases will open up areas of enormous value to wildlife, to cultural resources, and archaeological history. The leases are in areas of wilderness characteristics, and we're sacrificing all of that for development that's unnecessary and unneeded.
He says the major concern among the leases is an area known as Nine Mile Canyon, described as the world's longest art gallery.
Nine Mile Canyon is an area that even the BLM acknowledges has world-renowned cultural and archaeological value. The BLM itself has referred to Nine Mile Canyon as an outdoor museum.
Newell said the leases also threaten endangered species, including the Colorado pike minnow and razorback sucker. He adds that the fracking process for oil and gas uses enormous amounts of water and could pollute the Colorado River and tributaries where the fish live. For Public News Service, I'm Mark Richardson.
While much of the current talk about the Amazon has been about the fires, indigenous groups have expressed that Brazilian leader President Jair Bolsonaro's policies pose a much greater threat to them. In light of this, former rival tribes, including the Kayapo and Panara, who are at war for decades, have joined forces for their common purpose. Kayapo leader Mujir said, quote, "Today we have only one enemy, the government of Brazil, the president of Brazil and those invading indigenous territories. We have internal fights, but we've come together to fight this government," end quote. President Bolsonaro has repeatedly questioned the protected statuses of Brazil's indigenous people and their lands, which make up about 12% of Brazil's total territory. These lands include some territories of indigenous people who are still isolated and live without outside contact. Bolsonaro plans to open these territories for mining, logging, and agriculture. BBC Brazil analysis shows the number of fines handed out by the Brazilian government for environmental regulations has dropped significantly since Bolsonaro took office. Panara leader Cinco said the issue was about more than just the loss of forests. Quote, "I am concerned about the trees, water, fish, and loss and non-indigenous people who want to enter our land. I don't want to contaminate the water with toxic products from mining. That's why I'm here."
Last night, the nonprofit Period the Menstrual Movement held their annual State of the Period Gala in support of their efforts to create better access to menstrual products. KBOO's Claire Rosciato spoke to the founder, Nadia Okamoto, and her policy advisors. At its second annual fundraiser to raise awareness about equal access to menstrual hygiene products, the nonprofit was started by Portland native Nadia Okamoto, who is currently a junior at Harvard University. First, I spoke with two of Okamoto's policy advisors based in Ohio, Amir Abdul and Anush Singh.
And we both founded the Ohio State chapter together there, worked with the legislators on the issue of the pink tax / tampon tax in Ohio, advocating to eliminate that. And that slowly led us to, you know, working on the national level from the local level. And now we're the policy coordinators here at Period. We're co-directing a national campaign for National Period Day.
Policy advisor Amir Abdul explained next how the lack of access to menstrual products shouldn't be a gendered issue, and he uses the example of the basic access people have to toilet paper.
Truly, everyone within the organization believes this is not a woman's issue, it's not a men's issue, this is a human rights issue. There's no reason for us not to be providing menstrual products if we're providing free toilet paper. Providing toilet paper obviously is an essential. I believe it's a human right to have access to hygienic products in restrooms. For that exact reason, we should be providing free menstrual products in restrooms. A lot of the arguments we see is people don't have a budget for toilet paper, for menstrual products, but if you do have a budget for toilet paper, there's no reason you shouldn't have a budget for menstrual products. So that's something we're pushing to get in there. And, you know, hopefully we're taking one step closer every day. Now, there's no reason in 2019 menstruators should be missing class or missing school for a lack of, you know, menstrual hygiene products being provided in their restrooms. There's no reason that incarcerated women should be working and paying to buy, menstrual products.
Yeah.
There's no reason that, you know, shelters should be struggling to provide menstrual products to people in need. So that's something we're really passionate about doing, and we're very confident that we will be leading the way to end Period. A lot of the kickback we get is, what if people start stealing menstrual products? Well, how many people do you know steal toilet paper? And let's be honest here, if you are having the issue of someone stealing menstrual products, then we have a bigger issue at hand that we need to deal with. Also something we hear quite often is, well, menstrual products aren't that expensive. And if that's really your argument, then clearly you don't know enough about the issue, and I think you should take the step to learn more. We've heard numerous stories about how menstruators, mothers specifically, at the end of each month struggle to pick between, should I buy menstrual products, should I buy tampons and pads for myself, or should I put food on the table for my children? And that's really an unfortunate situation, because you're asking, you know, should I put my health at risk or feed my children? Most mothers, as you know, would likely feed their children and end up, you know, suffering the consequences, whatever that might be. So it's unfortunate, and that's something we're really trying to combat.
Yeah, everyone deserves to feel, you know, clean and confident on their periods.
Next, I spoke to the founder of Period the Menstrual Movement, Nadia Okamoto, and her work that has reached over 500 chapters nationwide, and some of the policy goals and accomplishments over the past 5 years.
So to date, we've addressed over 800,000 periods through product distribution. We've registered over 550 campus chapters in all 50 states and 30 countries. And we're really excited because over the next year, we're really taking on doing things like ending the tampon tax in the remaining 35 states, right? And trying to get free period products into school restrooms. And I think this is a really monumental time because we're coming up on 5 years of being an organization. I started this organization when I was 16. I'm 21 now. And we're kind of embarking on the next year as being kind of a pivotal year for the reproductive health rights movement in general.
That's fantastic. And can you tell us what the importance of next month will be?
Yeah. So next month, we are hosting the first ever National Period Day. So on one day, we're hosting rallies in all 50 states and major cities. And we're really mobilizing on the ground to kind of break the stigma around periods and try to change culture so that we can lay the groundwork to start passing some real policy.
That's fantastic. And can you talk a little bit more about the policy and what sort of action can everyone be taking to participate to make more access for everyone for period products?
So we have two main asks in this menstrual movement manifesto that we published, which is one, freely accessible period products in schools, shelters, and prisons, and two, to eliminate the tampon tax, which is a sales tax on period products, considering them luxury items in 35 remaining states, right? Mm-hmm. Which is insane because products like Rogaine and Viagra are considered essential goods. But, you know, this policy we've been working on, we've actually passed 12 pieces of legislation in the last few months, particularly around free period products in schools. Portland Public Schools is actually an example. So Grant High School helped pass some policy orders to get the district to invest $60,000 this year in free period products and dispensers in all of the new restrooms, right? Yeah. And that's kind of an example of what we're doing with policy, because we really believe that no one should be held back because of a natural need, right? And what could be more natural than menstruation?
Can you talk about what sort of things could be holding you back by not having access to products? And if you don't mind, can you share some of your own story?
Yeah. So, well, starting with my own story, my passion for periods comes from a really personal place. I founded this organization when I was 16, inspired by, you know, after a time when my family was experiencing living without a home of our own. I ended up talking to a lot of homeless women who are in much worse living situations than I was in downtown Portland, and heard their stories of using toilet paper and socks and brown paper grocery bags and cardboard to take care of their periods, right? And I think, you know, we constantly, still today, hear stories of when they don't have access to period products and they don't have underwear and they maybe don't have access to a bathroom or a shower. It becomes something that really holds them back, whether it's they feel like they need to stay close by to a public restroom and wait out their period, right, and not be as mobile, or they have to miss their next job interview, or they have to, you know, miss appointments. And we are actually really excited because we're about to release a few national studies that go even further into the barriers of period poverty, right? But you can look at, like, the first citywide study about period poverty recently came out about St. Louis and found that 46% of low-income women had to choose between a meal and period products.
Next, Nani Okamoto discusses migration and the access for immigrant children and young women having access to period products, and connects this to women facing the same issue in prisons.
In detention centers, migrant girls are forced to bleed through their clothes and only allowed one pad a day, right? Or, and that's not surprising to me because that happens in our U.S. prisons, right? And we are still seeing legislation like we did in Maine in April when the state government turned down a bill for freely accessible period products in prisons. A GOP representative stood up and said they shouldn't be free, otherwise they'd be like country clubs, right? So we still have so much more work to do, and what we're really here to do is say that no one should have to miss school or miss work or feel less mobile or less capable because of menstruation.
Next, Okamoto makes an interesting point that access to menstrual products is not a women's issue solely. It's a human issue.
Even taking it a step further, what we're trying to say is that this isn't a women's issue, this is a human issue, right? Period poverty is significantly a barrier for every factor that fits into gender equality. Education, healthcare, economic mobility, representation in politics and decision making, right? Like, there were op-eds published in 2016 of why Hillary Clinton couldn't be president because she's menstruating 25% of the time. She was about a decade too old to get a period, you know? But, you know, like, it's something that has significantly held back women all around the world. It's the number one reason why girls miss school in developing countries, the single event that leads to girls dropping out of school, getting married early, undergoing female genital mutilation, social isolation. What we say is that this is an issue that's holding us back from gender equality. Gender equality affects all of us because it prohibits us from breaking the cycle of poverty and making sure that 100% of our population is feeling empowered, right? And so what we do is, we don't do this work because of periods, we do this work because this is a key towards achieving gender equality. And I think when we put it in that context, we say this is not just for people who have periods and women, right? Right. And I think I'm on a plane like every day this month, actually, and I'm literally meeting all of these chapter members who tell me that this is work that they found their purpose in. Right. And yeah, I get exhausted. I get tired. I'm currently a junior at Harvard. I'm on book tour. I just published my first book, and it gets exhausting, and activism is literally fighting the status quo. Like, it is exhausting. But what keeps me up is I wake up every day so thankful to have this platform. I think activism saved my life in a time when I really needed it. And it showed me that my worth came from my voice and not just my body, right? And I think for me to feel that is such an inspiration to try to create that platform and opportunity for everyone else.
For sure. And as you noted, this is not just a women's issue or issue for those who menstruate. It's a human issue. Can you tell those who are listening right now how to get involved? Where can they go to online or elsewhere?
To join in supporting Period, you can just go to period.org and donate to us. We're really trying to build our capacity as we move into the next year. You can also start a chapter by going to the website, follow us at Period Movement, and there's so many ways to get involved. And if you want to join us for our rallies in any state that you're in, you can just go to nationalperiodday.com.
Awesome. Thank you, Nadia. Thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Claire Rosciato.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, September 13th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Janai Boyer and Jezaniah Hawthorne. The producer is Claire Rosciato, and our engineer is Sam Bowman. The director of our evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I am Jezaniah Hawthorne.
And I'm Claire Rosciato. Up next is Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your week.